This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
Hello, everyone. Blessings of the day to you and your time zone. I am Mary Hines, and I am bringing the improvisational prowess, and I am joined by my co-host.
I'm Mark Linsenmeyer, and I will bring some philosophy in the kit bag, but I brought along a ringer, a professional paid philosopher. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jenny Hansen. I'm the paid philosopher, but not paid well.
Not paid by us.
Not paid by you or, the universe.
Making the medium bucks.
Paid enough to have a job for the moment.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, so we'll take it.
The unicorn, yeah.
And Jenny has done at least 5 recordings with me over the years, maybe more than that, maybe 6, I don't know. But a number of Partially Examined Life ones, and then you've been on this show.
This is, I think, my 3rd time. I'm excited. I have no improv background. I just wing it. I don't know. Like, let's hope.
I will pause you right there, and I will repeat back to you your language. You said, I don't know any improv, but my point is, yes, you do. You wing it. You're an improviser. I could argue, and maybe I'll do it right now, that everyone is an improviser, but not everyone may have the sculpted personal training expertise in it with a coach, but it's listening. It's saying yes. It's trusting your intuition. It's leaping before you know where you're going to land and jumping with an idea and trusting that you'll know what to do and what to say along the way. Ah! AKA life, right? Like that's how life's.
Yeah, fair point. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, Mary, fine.
God help me jumping in, or the goddess help me jumping in. Okay.
This is the purpose, why you're back here, Jenny, even though you've been on the show twice before, but you hadn't met Mary. It's a whole different show now. It's a whole different thing.
Jenny, another cornerstone to improvisation, and I've been focusing on it hard in my work right now, it's about safety. We define our sandbox and can be given or revoked at any moment in time. And I'm starting a new round of Second City Improv 1 online classes this evening. And the first class, yeah, thanks. And the first, Jenny was making a wow face for anyone who's listening and not watching.
Yeah.
Thank you. I bust my booty and I love what I duty. We set that class code, the rules for our sandbox. And one of the core things that I teach, especially with beginning improvisers, I learned this from one of my friend-tors. Friend-tor is friend plus mentor. And it also makes me think of centaur, which makes me giggle.
Or friend-tor mentor.
Exactly. All those things. It's fun wordplay. Is that we get to treat each other like we are fragile and breakable, both emotionally and physically, because we are. And another tenet of the foundation of improv is it is an improviser's job to make their fellow players look good. So if Jenny is always like, it is my job to make you look good. Mark is like, it's my job to make you look good. And mine thusly, then we're like a tent. We're like tripoded in, leaning on each other. And Mark and I have had this conversation before with guests. We're like, oh man, I really wanted to do more improvisation. I'm so keenly reading body language, breath, all of the things, that I will never push someone farther out onto the leading edge than they feel capable of jumping. Because that's not fun. And that's not growth. That's stress response.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Yeah, right?
I'm in the tent. I feel good. Okay.
Yeah. Can you pass me some beef jerky? Or did you eat it all?
I think the cats ate it.
Oh, well, I'm glad we brought the cats with us.
The cats ran away. But yeah, I think the cats ate it. And anyways, it was vegan, so you wouldn't have wanted it.
To be fair, I think befriending those bobcats could have caused us a lot of problems down the line. So I think it's better that they... Look, we still have one with us. Hey, Scrumblebutt. Scrumblebutt, come over here.
Yeah. I was hoping, I had some actual beef. You don't do that anymore.
Yeah, no, we're doing a vegan camping retreat. So the best we can do is do you want a little pinch of pistachios? They're unsalted.
I mean, I try it.
Okay, here, try. You nibble on these pistachios and then we'll keep recording. Look at that. Friends, this is a fun one to watch, because the way Mark just nom, nom, nom on those pistachios.
Or when they lap milk.
See, Jenny, look, I just threw you right into the deep end. You had little swim floaties on and you were just like, oh my God. See, that's it. That's just a little demo of play. You know, we're creating a world that's never existed before. So I think people get tripped up. Like, you can make anything and do anything. And part of that can be really stressful and scary because we're programmed to like for rules and fitting into a rubric and doing something right. When you're like turned out into the field and you're like, you can go frolic wherever you want to, it's hard because we've been pummeled into submission into our systems.
Damn. All right.
Right, girl? Right, girl? We started heavy.
Subversive improv. I like it. Mm-hmm. We could go a whole feminist direction with that if you want. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of, so philosophy also very, very broad. There are many types of writing. You last came on Personally Examined Life. I brought this up to Mary at the time. Luce Irigaray, who is a very spicy writer, ostensibly still writing essays, but doing very weird things with the style. So one might think that, well, philosophy is actually very restricted because you have to make arguments. It has to be all ordered. But there are plenty of our favorite writers, especially on the over the pond, on the continental. Over the pond actually means over the English Channel, right? The British get counted as Americans.
Yeah, they're kind of rule followers. But yeah, like the continent.
Yes, the French, the Germans. And then if you go even more east than that, you know, you're going to get a lot of different styles, and let's present something as a narrative. Let's present something simply to blow your mind and get you to stop thinking in traditional ways, but not so much present a positive argument as an alternative.
Exactly. Good point. Irigaray is all about imitation and mimicry, right? So yeah.
Tell us more about that so Mary can vamp on that.
Oof, let's pull it out of the memory banks. So a lot of her style is to kind of like imitate the text that she wants us to look at differently to see the problems with the text. Sometimes she'll kind of like mimic the style of the text, or sometimes she'll mimic the stereotyped feminine person that's being described in the text, like exaggerate it to make the readers see how ridiculous the claims are about women, right? So she uses—
That's really cool.
Non-direct strategies, right? Because if she just came in and said, made an argument, like, I think your characterization of women is like not very nuanced, then you get into that like, you know? And so she just kind of plays around with voices in the text, and sometimes we'll just play the worst stereotypes of women in order to sort of point out like, come on, like, really?
There's so many elements of what you said that I really love. I think one of the things I've enjoyed the most about this podcast experience with Mark and with the array of intellectuals and creatives that we get on here is my ability to correlate the obvious connections between philosophy and theater. Because philosophy is theatrical, it's spectacle, it's specifically curated and designed to make an impact, which also makes a correlation to satire. Satire is all about reflecting a specific point of view to your audience. And my favorite part is this, that some creators do and don't do, but assuming the intelligence of your audience, presenting them with this character and with this concept while you are not making commentary on it as you're doing it. You're just, I think of it as a diamond, right? We are a diamond. Everyone is a diamond. Congratulations.
I've always wanted to be diamond.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, we'll have a little spot for you in the museum. You can pick your color velvet pillow, right? Oh my God, we'll have swatches ready.
Oh my God.
You are the diamond, and you are always present in any work that you do as a character, also alluding in philosophy, but it's where you turn the diamond to shine a different facet of light, period. End of thought.
And sometimes I'm shining it right into the eyes of the asshole I'm arguing with.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. The eyes of the asshole. That sounds like an essay title to me.
The eyes of the asshole. Yeah. No, because sometimes people don't want to play as much in philosophy, like going back to the pond thing. They want to manage it as this very debate and rules, and it's not fun. So yeah, sometimes those arguments become so much about like the rules of the game and ignore the substance. And sometimes the points you need to make, you have to make in other ways. I mean, when you were talking about theater, I was thinking Plato, right? I mean, I've often had students in my ancient class write their own dialogue in order to capture all of the rhetorical, playful insights from Plato about how to change hearts and minds.
Do you think that sometimes it's due to people's reticence to give up their tower of belief that they've built? Because much of something Mark and I discussed in our last episode, like, do you think it's like people feel like they're being challenged and they have blocks to growth and development? It's like ego related. I don't know. That's kind of a mishmash of question triggers to throw in your throwing at you.
I have like a million things that popped in my mind. Like,
yeah,
I guess there's an experience I've had sometimes with professional male philosophers that they are very invested in these like rules or these sort of like high, I mean, like logical points, maybe because that's like the first time in their life they've gotten some kind of power by being like the super smart rule maker and imposer. And they kind of narrow like the, I think about this like in the legal system, like there's times where people will use rules to constrain what can be said. Right. And it's to protect a position they're holding. So sometimes I think there's people that I'm going out on a limb here, but sometimes some of the males that I've encountered in philosophy have maybe not been the males that were like the quarterback on the football team or, you know, like the alpha male, like in the commercial real estate brokerage.
You're saying the philosopher men are beta cucks. Okay, go ahead.
And they may have been bullied even in their schooling. And then they found this thing that gave them power, which was being the smartest person in the room and, you know, a whole set of assumptions about logic and men. And so they've used that to gain power rather than promote truth is sometimes my view. But then like just getting away from like professional philosophers and that. Yeah. I mean, I not too long ago taught a piece by Peirce, Charles Sanders Peirce, called The Fixation of Belief. And he has these different categories of ways in which people try to prevent having to confront alternative viewpoints. And one is like the tenacious, like, you know, tenacity. And so I think sometimes people use rules or whatnot in order to not have to take in information that would challenge their worldview that they need because their identity depends on it.
Susie, thank you. Thanks so much for kicking off our treehouse meeting. You always have really good points. So this is a really important time at the All Girls Treehouse Club. Susie and I have decided that it might be time to let a boy into the All Girls Treehouse Club. So, hey, Philip, is there anything that you want to say?
I brought this list of common informal fallacies, and each one has a number next to them. And I want to pass this out. And Stacy,
I like the paper. I like that you picked Star Wars paper. I really love Chewbacca. I can make a Chewbacca sound when you hear it.
See, that's a number two. That's a non sequitur. So I'm just going to raise my little number two here. I only brought one set of the numbers on the toothpicks today, but I could bring them for everybody in the future if I'm admitted.
Philip, normally we don't jump right into new business until we've had snack time. So I brought some goldfish crackers, the multicolored ones. Susie, what snack did you bring to the clubhouse today?
I got the fruit roll-ups, the good ones.
Fruit roll-ups, 6 strawberry forever.
Right. Like, exactly. And we can make shapes with them if you want. Like, would love to.
Okay. I'm going to put up a number 6 because that's the slippery, slippery slope. Once you start making shapes and doing other sort of activities with the food, I mean, where does it stop? You're going
to
be...
Phil, I'm going to need you to shut your face real fast. Phil, I'm going to need you to shut your face
fast. What's right? Number for that shit? Like, what
and what's
is that
the number for snacks? Because we don't even get to numbers until we've had snacks. So unless you brought snacks, you're going to have to get out of Treehouse right now.
All right. Well, I've combined your red fruit roll-ups and with the goldfish and I made a red herring that's a number 8, introducing the relevant topic to defer attention for the original issue.
Salty and sweet's not supposed to be at the same time. It's supposed to follow before or after, depending on your need for a texture that's either chewy or crunchy. I can't do this.
It seems like you don't like being challenged about your taste palette.
We have rules at All Girls Clubhouse Treehouse.
I made a big, enormous, like, phallus with my, like, fruit roll-up. Like, you know, I put the fish in it as, like, the ad feminine. like, you know, screw you for telling us what the rules are. So there's my little like, and I don't care about slope, slippering slope, whatever bullshit. Like, you can't come after me with that.
Unless it's a slip and slide. I can't be, I don't want to.
Wait, okay, so well, Phil, hold on. I'm sorry.
I should be slip and slide. Like, absolutely.
Okay, so Phil, I understand and I acknowledge that you have some really great ideas. But for my mental health, which my mom says is really important and it's something that we're working on after school, what if we have snacks while we talk about all your rules? And we can compromise.
I feel like you're using an appeal to emotion, manipulating emotions to win an argument rather than using facts.
Shoved out of the treehouse. Sorry, you've just been pushed out of the treehouse. But there's a trampoline.
When don't we have emotions? I'm trying to figure that out. Like, what does he mean? What does he mean? What's a non-emotion?
Yes, taking us back to regular discussion out of the scene.
That was very therapeutic. I got so emotional.
Let's stop and talk about our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. I'm sure you've heard about this. So many people use it. If you want to create a website, you would be foolish to fail to check out this as one of the options. It is affordable. It is comprehensive. I remember back in the day in the 90s when I started making websites, trying to come up with a design from scratch, given my lack of design talent. Horrible. Well, here you've got a myriad of professionally designed, award-winning website templates to choose from, or use their Blueprint AI, answer a couple questions, have it come up with a completely custom template just for you to match your style. When I wanted to start selling digital content, physical content on my website, a whole bunch more junk to figure out. I had to juggle a whole bunch of different plugins, keep track of when they update. Invariably, they conflict with each other when they update. Squarespace makes it very easy to monetize your content, creating your paywall, tracking memberships, and using that customer information that you gather through sales to then let you create beautifully integrated email campaigns. Again, I have used plugins that are not organically connected to the store. Were I starting from scratch, I would definitely do this instead. All this is idiot-proof, no experience required. Head to squarespace.com/Linsenmeyer. That's my last name, LinsenMayer, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain using the code Linsenmeyer.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school hall or a church. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend or family member, or a charity. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. There's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
I was asking Jenny by email to elaborate on, Mary, what we talked about last time together. You know, this sort of Socratic challenge of, I'm putting you on blast. Come debate me in the public square. You have some beliefs that are inconsistent with each other. I'm going to show that they're inconsistent. And you're going to have to right now admit that you're wrong or change your mind or just storm off and huff. And is there a way that one could be thoroughly examined, self-examined, but yet has a more feminist tinge to it, does not use some of those aggressive masculine tropes?
Gosh, like, for sure. I think the problem sometimes with the way arguments unfold in professional conference settings that seems to have not gotten all of the genius humor in so many writers like Plato is that a dialogue is a dialogue. It is between people and it is trying to figure out where you connect and where you share understanding and maybe lowering the bar for entry a little bit, you know, having silly moments, cracking jokes, trying to make space for showing up in lots of ways. And I think even if someone's not, as a philosopher, writing a dialogue, which is about communication and not about like destruction of opposing viewpoints. I think that a lot of philosophers have used all sorts of rhetorical tricks and metaphors and inside jokes to make it not so damn serious sometimes, right? Like, what if? What if, you know, you're a bat? What is life like as a bat? You know, I mean, sometimes you use ridiculous thought experiments to get people to not be intimidated, to open their minds. And I think, yeah.
Play is one of the most humbling things. And play is also accessible and it works through language. A lot of my work is tied to the work of Viola Spolin, who I call her the great goddess grandmother of improvisation. She is really like the source linchpin of modern comedy related into improvisation as we see it. And in Chicago, she created this lexicon of improv games for immigrant children who don't speak the same language.
That's really cool.
Isn't that amazing? So the unifying force and the golden thread in this tapestry is play for children who are from all around the world and don't speak the same language. So that unifying force is like clowning, comedia, like it's really cool. There's just like an access point to it that it changes how we think. It changes how we breathe.
You know, I don't always think about why I do these things, but I've used so many strategies in the classroom because we're in such a polarized time and like people don't, they have a narrative and they've demonized you before you've opened your mouth and they've figured out what's wrong with you and they have all their counter arguments or rebuttals ready. And I don't even mean like formally, I mean, just like the way our political discourse is. I often will now like very consciously start all my classes with like silly games. Like one of them is like a game about whether or not someone cheated on someone else, but every group has only like slightly pieces of information and they have to go around to each other and get the clues. But it's like very like funny because it's kind of like a college setting that they can relate to. And then other things like that, because students are terrified to speak their mind because they're terrified of being canceled or terrified of being sent to take them out, you know,
yeah, like thrown out of the tribe, like rejected from the fire, like turned away from the hearth, like our lizard brain amygdala response of like being ostracized
or literally like arrested, you know, now or like
that too.
Put into like campus jail. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I think like just starting off reminding people like at the end of the day, we're all just silly and like, it's a long class, you know, let's just remember what it was like to have fun has helped. And I hadn't thought about that as strategic. It's just maybe comes from my personality. Like I've tried to be relatable. You know, I use my body. I use my humor a lot.
Use your whole instrument. You've got access to so many communicative, so much inventory of expression. I feel
exactly.
Like something I've been observing in our guests and as I just observe the world, I feel like people can look at someone who is choosing to be playful and see that as unprofessional. And one of my big missions, because, you know, I am a master and I am always a student because that is how it, we're always learning and unlearning and relearning and reshaping. And I feel like, and I'd love to know what you guys think of this. I feel like there is a fear in being seen as weak or flippant when actually utilizing all of the colors on your palette, which include play, whimsy, etc., actually helps you make stronger points because you're accessing all of your inventory. So I think what I'm holding up are these two pillars of like play and professional, and they can both not exist at the same time. But my argument in my existence as Mary Mary is you can be both playful and professional at the same time. What?
But and it takes bravery. I think people...
So much courage.
I think people think they won't be taken seriously. And the opposite turns out to be the case. When you create this relatability and engagement with people, they're more tuned into you. They're going to listen to you, right? And then you can kind of pivot sometimes and say something serious. And then, I don't know. I just think, I think people are, they want to save face. They want to seem professional. Sometimes they want to seem professional precisely because they want to maintain power and not because they actually want to be professional. If by that we mean respect, listen.
They want to be seen in their seniority.
Right.
Mark has been so polite. Because Jenny, I'm already like in love with you. Like I'm already like looking forward to, I mean, Mark, I love you too. But like Mark's face is
Jenny's
precious.
Jenny's going to take over Jenny, the podcast already, going forward. She's going
to. No, Jenny, I'm already, I'm excited to communicate with you in the future and like, you know, like talk improv games. Or now the mogul side of my brain is like, oh, how can I work with Jenny? And I can come in and do like 20 minutes at the top of her virtual class and lead some improv warmups. Like I'm already.
Invitation is open. You're in, like, look, we're already in the clubhouse group. Like, let's just like, you know, keep it going and we'll have snacks.
Ladies, could you answer the question? You know, do you understand why I pulled you over?
Wow. I've never seen a mustache like that. Have you, Charlotte?
No. I mean, whatever. Porn stash, I guess. I'm sorry. No, sir. No. What did I do wrong?
Charlotte, get it together. He's cute and we're in trouble. So figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, sir. What seems to be the problem?
I mean, I'm looking at your license here. I mean, it seems like you're the one, Buxy Ray. Like, that sounds more like a porn star name than my stash looks like a porn star stash.
Well, I got nothing against porn stashes. I mean, like, you took that the wrong way.
It's a compliment. It's really hard to get that much growth and fullness, and also with management, you know, like, it's actually and the, respect. Yeah, like
the trimming,
sir.
The trimming and the, yeah, yeah, like,
and you use some product. I see some product in there. Is that a wax or is that a spray?
I mean, I do wax. It's really hard to get the mustache extended this far on either side without using some kind of wax.
And with your helmet too, like making sure that you don't like cut your wing. What do we call it? Wing tips? Those are shoes. Does that apply for face as well?
No,
I don't know.
No, it's a bar. I sort of think of it like a football grill with the helmet. You know, that it's kind of like a virtual grill because I kind of want to feel like I'm on the field. I'm out among the people. You don't mind me, you know, deviating from the script a little bit like this.
I don't know. I apologize if this is inappropriate. I know we're trying to get to a convention,
yep.
But
yep.
You're so nice. Are all cops this nice? Bugsy. But I can't. What's
that's officer. No, you I thought.
I think I'm Buxy McBooty or something. What was my name?
Buxy is driving. I'm in the passenger seat and I'm leaning over across Buxy.
All right. And, so Charlotte's your name, your sir. Real
sorry,
name.
Sorry, I didn't get your name. I'm Charlotte.
Yeah.
Oh, she's Charlotte. Sorry, we're a little high right now. I'm sorry. I just said it. I am sorry.
I prefer if you just call me sir. I mean, it says Officer Pingle Daddy, but usually that name throws people. So I prefer just Officer.
I mean, Pingle Daddy
of the Welsh Pingle Daddies.
Originally a Russian name. I mean, it's translated. You know, when my ancestors came over, it was Pingle Dada Lamakov, and they thought that was too long.
Oh,
so
of course, it sounded familiar. Well, it sounded
to
familiar.
Just Pingle Daddy.
Were your people the ones that did the brisk? Is that some kind of like cutting off of the Charlotte?
I don't know what you're even referring to.
I'm curious what. Pingle Daddy.
Is anyone else sweating? I'm sweating. It's really hot.
I'm definitely thirsty. I'm a little thirsty.
The real literal translation in the Russian is one who digs down deep, gets at the root of things, pulls up to the light of day, and shows you the money.
Well, this has been really enlightening, and it's been so lovely chatting with you, but we really have to get to the conference. We're teaching masturbation at the Self-Pleasure Conference over in Wilmington. And we got to get going. So thanks so much.
I'm just
going
to leave the ticket with you. So, you know, drive safe.
Oh, and here's a flyer. Come to the masturbation clinic. We're having a couple masturbation clinics.
I don't know
today.
That I need any help with that. I think I can handle that on my own. But thanks.
Maybe you can help us. All are welcome.
All right. I think you're going to get two tickets now. Here's a second ticket for.
Oh, one for each of us.
For your smart,
oh, that's nice.
For your smart mouth.
Like, at least we can feel like we were treated equally.
Yes.
Very. And that's important to me and you and us.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, we're all about, we're about equity. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Turn the body cam back on.
Okay.
I'm dog sitting right now and I've just summoned Wally. Here's another thing. This is not my point, but I've noticed that animals are so responsive to joy. Like whenever I'm laughing or whenever my vibration is really high, it summons one of my critter clients. And so I've summoned Walter, the pony boy.
Oh, well, I feel bad that I haven't summoned BBC, which is the big black cat.
Well, Jenny, can you get your shit together? Can you actually bring some A game here? Because you've been phoning it in the whole time. I'm meaning to tell you.
I feel when when I'm interviewing someone and I show them that their beliefs are inconsistent and that they need to change, then my cat inevitably joins the just to mock them and kind of
see that
gives them
sense.
like a stink eye.
That cats are in response to cat adjacent. Mm-hmm. And dogs are in response to like, dog, just so happy to be here. It's really nice. Thanks for having me.
Cat's like the schadenfreude.
The stink eye or the bitch slap, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is what, I'm sorry. This is what I wanted to say. I had summoned Walter, but I had a point related to that improvisation. I refer to it in my teachings as crazy town. We went to crazy town, and which is good. Crazy town is fun, but you don't start in crazy town. Because if you start in crazy town, the important thing about improvisation is celebration and escalation. It's consistently taking steps up of yes anding, and then baked into that, you're yes anding by celebrating and escalating. So if you start at crazy town, then you're going to have to like eventually run into the audience, throw a chair around. Like you have to keep escalating it. So crazy town is earned. And I think we earned that organically through the point of view of our ridiculous characters. And Mark, I want to celebrate you. Yes. And did the shit out of what we were giving you. I'm really proud of you. Anyone, I'm sure you can hear that I'm pointing my finger, but if you're watching, you can see that the teacher in me is really proud of Mark. That was awesome.
Well, and I was trying to give you the gift of a name this time because you had already named Jenny as Charlotte. And so you were the driver in my scenario, but I was not sufficiently clear so that it just became...
That's like semantics. That's choreography, right? Like, that's okay. I know that was confusing,
but I can't remember the name I was given, but whatever it was fabulous.
It was like Bugsy something.
I called it Bugsy McBooty or something.
That sounds great. I love Bugsy McBooty. Something we did really well in that scene that I want to celebrate is that there are no mistakes, only opportunities. Anything that has happened has happened. The audience has seen and heard it. We are not able to ignore it. You are able to transform it. However, you must accept that the given circumstances have been given, and then you can build from there. So we were having a frickin' rigmarole of remembering who was who. And you could feel it. There's a real musicality to improvisation. And I'm sure also to like to debate and teaching. And we were escalating the tempo. Everything was escalating. The craziness was rising. And my brain, I was like, all right, I have to justify this really quick. And so I blurted out, I'm sorry, we're high. Which that was a turning point that then brought us back to base level because I had to acknowledge the fact that we all didn't know each other's names. And then it helped justify these two chicks and how they're talking to this cop.
It was genius. That was genius.
That was generous. Thank you. Genius is generous. No, that was great. I'm proud of us.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
There's like so many things you just reminded me of, but
yeah, since pick one of the pinballs in the machine that,
because this is like turning out to be exact, like a therapeutic podcast today. I mean, going back to like the way that you can de-escalate the professionalism as power trip is kind of laughing at the shit that people do. So I want to tell, I know this is going to be live, so I'm going to tell the story, but it actually happened to me. But I was talking to the chair of the board of trustees because I'm the chair of the faculty council.
Yeah, and you are badass. Let's go.
Right. My title is like run the world. So I had made some, I thought, fairly nuanced questions. I'd raised questions that were hard, and I was sort of met with like a coordinated like takedown, right? The whole time. And I have so much experience that I had pretty much a poker face or, you know, slowed it down. But then because that wasn't working the way that and these are both women and they're both very successful, powerful women. And they decided that because they weren't getting me to shut up and obey and be on their team.
And concede, right?
Yes. So this is how the meeting ends. This woman looks at me and she says, okay, well, I'm gonna end the meeting this way, Jenny. As Madeleine Albright says, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. So, and as she says that to me, I just start standing up to walk out because she's telling me that the thing's going to end. You know, I'm just like, okay, well, good day, sir.
I said good day, sir.
No way to respond to that other than to just laugh at what she just said, which was ridiculous, right? I'm fairly certain that in my entire career, that was the most overtly sexist thing anyone has ever said to me to get me to obey in a meeting, is to tell me there's a special place in hell for me for not agreeing with them.
Holy shit. And so that's,
yeah. But the thing is like the satisfaction for me, even though afterwards there was like a lot of like, like I'm rocky, but sometimes I do get taken down. Like I can't come back right away from the punches, but to be able to have had enough experience knowing that the best way to meet such an absurd and violent comment like that is to just mock it, is to just get up and go and be like, all right.
Thank you for sharing that story. That's like, wow. What comes to mind from the improvisational point of view is status. And we define it in its polarities of high and low status. And sometimes one of the best ways to have high status is to give away your status. So there's a real power there in giving and taking. And if someone is so strong on the I'm taking status, then why am I going to waste my energy trying to take what isn't available to me? So I'm going to give it to you and then observe your reaction.
And the part that I haven't that I left out is as I started getting up, you know, because it's like, we're going to end this way and I can hear what she's going to say. And I'm like standing up and, you know, like getting ready to leave, like, okay.
Getting your blade. Getting your stuff together.
All that kind of response I gave her and the other woman, I think made them hear their words. And so they quickly tried to pivot and be like, well, wait, before you go, tell me what's good about your classes. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I kind of think that sometimes the trap is to try to defend yourself against someone who says such provocative things that are just, like I wasn't going to try to out alpha her on that one or be like, or say, you know, well, I could say that of you, right? Like, I mean, that's the trap. The trap is to be like, oh, righty, boss, out of here, you know, like, good day, off to teach. And
two things come to mind improv related that repetition is not redundancy. So a great way to like handle a situation like this is to repeat back what you heard.
True.
And says that repeat it back, yesing and anding a little bit. Also, a more simplified version of that is one of my favorite exercises that I teach a lot in corporate workshops called last word, first word, which requires really active listening, which Mark is nailing right now, so much that it's making me nervous. Oh, well, he's listening. So when I stop talking, your next word is the last word I have spoken. Spoken very well, I might add. Thank you, Rebecca. Right? So you use their last word and flip it.
I love that. I got to put that into practice. I like that.
See?
Yeah.
That was what, yeah. More dialogue to come from late. Mark, you're making me nervous. Say something.
I have been thinking about the distinction between a philosophy as informational content and philosophy as a performance. The actual utterance, the actual dialogue, as you were saying, Mary, you know, when something happens in a scene, you can't deny that it happened. But there's, when you're trying to say testify, well, actually, this is a good potential point that works against what I'm trying to say. When you testify in court, right, you're just trying to give the information. But if you say the wrong thing and then you're like, oh, wait a second, no. What I meant was, on the one hand, if you're just giving information, then they just want the second answer. If they're trying to catch you in something, if they're trying to see if you're lying, then obviously the first thing that you said that you tried to correct, they're going to jump on that and they're going to nail you to that. And so when you're engaged in describing your philosophical ideas to someone, you often feel like if somebody wins the debate, well, it's just because, like, you know, the other one wasn't as strong a debater, was not as good as thinking it on their feet, was not saying the right words in the right order, did not come up with that zinger, that comeback that would have really worked there. But ideally, Philip, that wants to come to the treehouse with all the rules, it's about clearing out all that rhetorical brushwork. It should not be performance. It should not be a sequential series of utterances that somebody has to listen to. It should be a coherent system that is set down, ideally to be just read over and over and over again until you understand, and then you can ask me questions about it.
Yeah.
So there's no room for mistakes.
Yeah.
That sounds like punishment to me, if I'm being honest. That sounds like torture, actually.
I know. I have the bruises.
Is that one of the targets of feminist philosophy? Is that sort of... Because it's not the...
Jenny's face.
Master, I'm such a masculinist that I'm shouting you down and not letting you be heard or anything like that. It is a... Well, except insofar as it is a monologue. Here's my set of ideas. In fact, maybe I'm Hegel. Maybe I'll write 7 books or whatever that are all really long and they're all connected together in one system. And until you've read them all, you're really not in a position to question anything that I say. So, you know, so obviously grown to extremes, this becomes like the, you know, masculine ego served up on a historical platter.
I used to make fun of, I remember going to conferences on specific figures, like, I don't know, Heidegger or someone like that. And people showing their alphaness by, well, but you didn't talk about footnote 72 in the, you know, like lectures unpublished that are, you know, still in German, right? Like this kind of like, yeah, this kind of like, I'm smarter and I've mastered everything more than you. And if you aren't at my level, like, you know, I think that I have cultivated happily playing dumb to win arguments sometimes. Like a lot of times...
You nailed a point I've been thinking this whole time.
Yeah. And I've seen some forms of philosophers try to do this too, but they do it in such an obvious way. They'll kind of make this like pinched look, like, I don't follow what you're saying, you know, like to try to make you feel like shit. But I usually will just kind of like pause for a minute when I know I'm being set up in some argument. And then I'll be like, wait, what? What does that word? Wait, what does that word mean again? That you just can you just run through that again? Or like, I know a fact about something they've done that kind of like shows that they're being hypocritical, and then I'll pause and I'll be like, and sort of ask. I mean, it's hard to do it without an example, but recently,
I get it. Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying.
So
yeah.
A way of kind of like, very consciously playing like the dumbwit, or dumbwit. That should be a word. That's like a Ted Lassoism right there. All right. So I don't feel like they've taken any power from me when I do that. It's like maybe why I like Irigaray and the whole mimicry. Like they will start thinking that I'm dumb, and then they start making more errors. And then eventually my stupid questions actually expose their true motives.
That makes me think of your opinion of me is none of my business. Mm. And my worth is not defined by what you think of me.
Yeah.
And I am confident enough in myself that I hold my power enough that you don't dictate my worth.
Exactly.
And Jenny, you've also just addressed my initial comment about, is there a feminist alternative to the Socratic approach as described as basically the equivalent of Charlie Kirk. and the answer is, it's Socrates' actual approach, which is not like,
yes.
Socrates is not like, come debate me on the square.
Not at all.
No, he's like, he comes upon someone who is already puffed up with their own dogmatic arrogance. and then just ask some questions. I'm just asking questions. I'm just a fool who knows nothing, and then tries to get them.
SNL skit. Yes. I am just a caveman. I am unfamiliar with your ways, right? Like, yeah, no, mm-hmm. I think that is dead on. I think that people who think that Charlie Kirk represents the Socratic method have not read Plato, because Charlie Kirk is Euthyphro. Charlie Kirk is Meno. Charlie Kirk is, you know, especially the Sophist, Pythagoras, Gorgias. He is the person that thinks that he is right and is like not willing to actually make an argument in support of his own positions, but just says, prove me wrong, which shifts the burden to the other person. It's not really fair. And Socrates has been a model for us of how to respond to somebody like that, right? Is to just kind of like, oh, you are so much wiser than me on this. Thank goodness I ran into you today. Now I'm going to be able to get out of this indictment because you have powers that the gods speak to you. Holy crap. What fortune. Like, that is the Socratic method. It is not domination, like prove me wrong and then mocking people before they've even finished a sentence, right? Like, that's not dialogue.
I think, Mark, this, if we could go back in time, having done this recording with Jenny on a conversation, our podcast conversation, probably about like two sessions ago, where I spoke about how I don't like debate. I don't enjoy argument. Like, when I'm put in a situation, and what I think now that I know more than I did then, I don't like being like pushed and bullied, right? Like how, using the words pushed and bullied, like, and when I feel myself up against the masculine ego, that hardness, and when that's like coming at me, my first response is just to disengage and be like, yeah, you're right.
I honestly think that's what you should do. Like, I have many times told students, you need to care about your time and your mental health. And if you are in a conversation where it is clear that the other person's not interested in making progress towards truth and they just want to dominate you, peace out.
I do enjoy like finding ways, because I'm aware that that's like a personal bias, like a personal feeling that I feel like I feel like I'm being attacked because it is an attack in some way. But then when I feel those feelings in the conference room, that is my brain, Mary comes in and is like, hey, be soft, listen, be changed. Oh my gosh. And my battery is saying it's about to die, even though it's plugged in.
We're about to wrap up here. I just, you know, all the single ladies up in the club, we just broke up. If you like it, you should put a ring on it. Prove me wrong.
And then we start twerking and moving away from you as soon as possible.
That's how you respond to that.
Battery.
Thanks, Jenny, for hanging out.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. This was so fun. And it turned out to be just what I needed today. So
fun.
Yeah. Mary, let's keep in touch for sure.
I call it follow the flick. Like when you click a lighter and it like flicks and flashes, like trust the thing that flashes to you, and you're flashing me is what I'm saying.
Thank you. I'm back to being the diamond. Yay. Okay. Awesome.
Bye, listeners.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Philosophy vs. Improv. Check out our homepage, philosophyimprov.com. To support the effort and get an ad-free experience with our post-game discussions, support us at patreon.com/philosophyimprov. This podcast is a member of the Partially Examined Life family of podcasts. See partiallyexaminedlife.com. Bankrupt. 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 Bankrupt.